hello out there in the radio waves through Carbondale and beyond. It's time for Express Yourself, if you can believe it. Another Friday. Not only that, it's a first Friday.
Woo, first Friday already.
I'm Brian. I'm here with the one and only Kat.
Hi, Brian.
How's it going?
Good. It's nice to be here on this lovely July Friday. I think it's first Friday.
It is July, and it is kind of snuck up.
Woo, July. It did. It just kind of crept right up there, didn't it?
Well, let's see what we've got today on Express Yourself. We will have a conversation with Katrina Toews discussing her experience working for the Washington Ballet, talking about a class coming up about parent-child movement and American Sign Language. Before that, we'll have a conversation with Fran Page about a cool dance performance coming next weekend called Shoes.
Ooh, I like Shoes.
You won't want to miss that, Kat.
No, I'm not going to.
And first up, our esteemed Carbondale Arts director, Amy Kimberly, had an interview with the deputy director of Colorado Creative Industries, Christine Costello, talking about the state of the arts in Colorado. So stay tuned and get informed about all the creative things happening around here.
Express yourself.
Express yourself.
This is Amy Kimberly, and I'm on the phone with Christy Costello, Deputy Director of Colorado Creative Industries. Hi, Christy. How are you?
I'm well. How are you? Thanks for having me.
No, things are heating up, not only temperature-wise, but events. Life is coming back. And a lot of it, I just want to say, is thanks to the hard work of the Colorado Creative Industries, which is an arm of the Colorado Office of Economic Development. And maybe you could just start out by giving our audience a little history.
Absolutely. Colorado Creative Industries is the designated state arts agency in Colorado, and we're formerly known as Colorado Council on the Arts, but we've been around since the 60s. Our mission is to support, promote, and expand the creative industries to drive Colorado's economy, grow jobs, and enhance our quality of life. And we do that through a series of programs, grants, and professional development opportunities that really create a supportive system and infrastructure for arts, culture, and creative industries. And creative industries are a really big driver of the economy and the state. They make up 4.5% of our GDP, which is more than mining or transportation. So it's a big, big driver of the economy, but also really important, really on the social level.
Yeah, and it's interesting because since you have really launched this creative district program, which I believe was around 2011, it feels like that has really helped so many communities advance and create a plan. And obviously, Carbondale, we're a creative district here, and it's really helped us come together as a community with a kind of common vision of where we want to, how we want to move forward with our future. But, you know, sometimes there's also other sides that come into play as well, because as we know, when we create these beautiful communities, then there's also issues, gentrification, all of those kind of issues as well. How has the Creative District program been working for others around the state?
Well, yeah, you're right. The program was enacted in 2011 through a state legislation, and since then we've certified 26 creative districts all over the state, in communities large and small. The smallest is in Grand Lake, and then we've got a handful in the city of Denver and the metro area. And essentially, like you mentioned, the program helps communities develop their community and economic development strategies around our culture. What that kind of does is it helps the communities kind of get on the same page, working together across sectors, in order to just kind of create momentum across all kinds of areas. And you know, you mentioned with kind of with growth and success challenges, and that's something that we're really focusing on with this program, is helping communities figure out how they can be proactive with some of the challenges that come up with growth and success, everything from kind of housing to a sustainable workforce. We're kind of focusing on all of those areas to help creative districts succeed.
And I like that approach because it is kind of multimodal. You do have the Space to Create grant, which it helps with affordable creative housing in some communities. You have the Career Advancement Grant, which can help individual artists. So you have a lot of programs out there that kind of hit on all levels. Do you have like a particular success story of a community out there? I know there's actually a lot of success stories, but what's one that stands out in your mind?
Yeah, well, besides Carbondale, I think Trinidad is a really good example right now. It's when we started working with Trinidad, their population was declining and they had really high vacancy rates in the downtown area. And now Trinidad is kind of we were able to execute a Space to Create project in Trinidad, I think, when the timing was right there, before things, before affordability was really a big issue. And so now there's a affordable live-work space for creatives in Trinidad that's open and operating with, I think, over 30 units of affordable live-work housing. And it's kind of the new hotspot that people have been moving to now that there's more opportunity to live outside of metropolitan areas. Their vacancy rates are really low on the main street now, and sales tax is up. So that's a big success story. But like you said, I mean, I think all the creative districts are big success stories.
Well, it's interesting. Trinidad is a great example. I've just seen so many articles coming out about, you know, all the young people moving there. And as we know, there is a great fleeing from the urban areas since COVID. And Trinidad is going to see the huge impacts of that. Many of those impacts are incredible. But how do we all deal with gentrification? I don't know that there's any one solution, but I'm just curious, at the state level, are there ever conversations around that?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's a really complex issue, and we work with communities that want growth so badly, and then when growth comes, like I mentioned, you know, when a lot of growth comes, when too much growth comes, then these challenges come too. So we're really trying to work with creative districts to be proactive about strategies to address some of the issues that come with gentrification. And Space to Create is one solution for that. It's really, really challenging, and it's not perfect. I think that there's, you know, in some communities, they've seen more growth than they can handle. And we're just trying to work with communities to figure out what the challenges are and come up with solutions for those. And one of those is clearly housing.
Right, right.
Which mainly, is, you know, really across the whole state.
Across the whole state, yeah. And I think that's what I love about Colorado Creative Industries, is you guys don't shy away from the issues. You really get in there and try to look at what the next steps could be. You were extremely proactive during COVID. You guys were out there. There was incredible relief grants we got and lots. And that's still continuing. How has COVID affected your organization?
Well, it's been a roller coaster, as it has been for everyone. We conducted some research at the kind of earlier on in COVID on the industry. And, you know, it was no surprise that arts and culture was hit one of the hardest of all the industries, particularly the performing arts and visual arts industries. And so I think, you know, it's been interesting time for the arts, because I think we've been spending a lot of years reaching out to other sectors to partner with them and try to communicate the value of arts and culture in society. And I think this, the kind of profound events of the last year have accelerated people's understanding of the role that arts can play in other areas of society. Mm-hmm. And so what that's kind of resulted in for us now is that in this, you know, in the special session, we received arts and culture, arts, culture and entertainment relief funding. And then in the regular session, we received another $15.5 million for arts and culture relief funding. And that was, that amount was kind of based on the unmet need that we had in that original grant program. So we're hoping that we can make that available as soon as August. We also, kind of circling back to being proactive with some of the challenges in communities and creative districts, we received $65 million for the Community Revitalization Grant Program, which is in partnership with the Department of Local Affairs. And that program will help provide gap funding for community revitalization projects. And that could include projects that make more affordable workforce housing for creatives available. Yeah. It's not limited to projects related to housing. It's really any kind of community-based revitalization project that has a creative element. So it's been a roller coaster, but we've come out with all of these exciting opportunities to support arts and culture in the state that are all coming very soon.
And did we see a lot of attrition over COVID, or because of a lot of the work that I honestly feel you guys have done, have we been able to keep the majority of organizations and venues and all the multi-levels of arts alive?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I don't know if we have really good data on that, but I haven't heard of too many organizations having to shut their doors. Hopefully some of the relief funding that we were able to offer during the pandemic was helpful in people stabilizing. And I think in Colorado, people were just really innovative about how they responded and survived, you know, with their businesses and organizations.
We saw a lot of people really support the arts. We sold more art in our gallery in 2020 than in 2019, which was extremely interesting. And some of that came from putting the art online for sale, which we had never felt the need to do before. But now we probably won't go back to the other way. Now we'll probably continue some of those things that came out of COVID that we learned about. So very interesting times. And in our community, supported beyond belief. So between the state support and local support, we made it through, and we feel that a lot of that is because of the direction of the cohesiveness that has come out of the Creative District program, and all of us working together and finding these ways to maneuver through, you know, all the challenges. So let's get to some of the good news out there. I mean, obviously, things are opening up. We're headed into the 4th of July weekend. We have choices. People are going to be out and about. Red Rocks is open. What are you seeing out there, and how is it feeling different in Denver since you're up there and we're still down here?
Oh, wow. I know. It's really incredible how quickly things can change. And now Red Rocks is at full capacity. And I mean, things really do seem like they're getting back to normal here in Denver. So I think some of the, you know, indoor performance-based organizations are still navigating some of the challenges of just, you know, people feeling comfortable coming back and returning to indoor settings. But it seems to me like the outdoor live music scene is back on.
Yeah, and I think that was extremely missed. Movies as well. Our movie theater here finally just opened. I think they're only open like Thursday through Monday, and you have to show proof of vaccination. I know the Belly Up as well opened, and they too have a whole system in place where you have to show proof of vaccination. It's a mixed bag because, you know, some places are requiring that, some places aren't. But at least we're getting live music back, and that is extremely appreciated. So what else is happening out of the Colorado Creative Industries as we look towards the future? Where do you feel your focus will be? I know there's a summit coming up in Steamboat Springs in the fall, which is exciting. And who knows what new programs you might launch. Can you give us a hint?
Yeah, so we do have our annual summit in person happening in the Steamboat Springs Creative District. It is September 30th and October 1st. And registration's open right now, so if you go to our website, coloradocreativeindustries.org, you can register for that. And we are just opening our Arts and Society grant program, which is a great collaborative grant program between multiple funders administered by Redline and funds projects that are at the intersection of art and some kind of social issue. So hopefully people will check that out and apply. And then, as I mentioned, we have all these new opportunities that we're working on related to state funding. We also received some federal funding from the National Endowment for the Arts, and we're planning to open a really exciting new grant program this fall that will be for individual artists. So those are some hints of what's ahead.
Wow, that is exciting. I mean, that's where a lot is needed. Nonprofits, there's a lot of opportunity to apply for grants. You don't always win them. But if you're an individual artist or entrepreneur, sometimes it's really hard to find some money to advance your career or to start something. So I can't wait to hear about that. I have found so many artists that have really made the leap over COVID from doing, you know, regular jobs to just throwing it all out there and saying, I'm going to follow my passion. I've seen it so much. I mean, every day almost I have someone pops in my office. Can I just pick your brain for a minute? Can I just pick your brain for a minute? So my brain is picked. It's pretty picked clean right now because we have a mountain fair coming up, and that's taking a lot of focus. But on the other hand, it's exciting to see so many people just really go for it. And I think that will really help bring our economy back around. And it's not easy. It's not easy in a place like this. Even though we do have support, it's a very expensive place to do business. So I'm excited to see what's coming down the pike. Also want to mention that the summit is open to anyone, right? It's not just for organizations.
Right. Yep. It's for artists, people. Organizations are welcome. Anyone kind of working in the arts and community development is a great fit for. before.
Yeah, it's a really fun opportunity to network with a lot of different people across sectors. So I appreciate it. We're really looking forward to coming up there and being part of it. I just thank you for all the work you do, Christy. It's a delight to work with you, but also Margaret and the whole team. I see now Libby is in charge of the Change Leader Program, so you maybe are hiring someone else. I don't know. But you guys are busy, and you have your fingers in everything and your eyes to what's happening. And I think we feel so supportive because of that, and it makes our jobs in the creative sector much easier to do. It's really changed the conversation from why are arts important to, yes, arts are strong economic drivers as well as emotional drivers in our world. And I thank you. I thank you a lot for that work. If someone wants to find out more about Colorado Creative Industries, where do they go?
They go to ColoradoCreativeIndustries.org.
Perfect. And you can find your way to grants, to programs, learn more about what's happening, sign up for the summit. Hopefully we'll see many people in Steamboat Springs. Thank you so much, Christy, for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks, Amy, for that great interview with Christy Costello of the Creative Industries. We've got to meet Christy a few times coming through Carbondale. It's always fun to get involved with them.
Yep.
And as a creative district, we have done that a few times.
We are killing it as a creative district, and it would, you know, a lot of that support doesn't come without support from the Colorado Creative Industries, which has been a really important part of making our state more beautiful. So that's exciting. So coming up next, we have Fran Page of the Aspen Dance Connection and Amy Anderson of Emerging Movement Arts, and they will be talking about the upcoming dance performance called Shoes, one of my favorite things, and the accompanying workshops that are happening with that performance.
Stay tuned.
Okay, welcome. This is Megan Jansen here for Express Yourself, and I am in the studio right now with Fran Page from Aspen Dance Connection.
Hello.
And we also have on the phone Amy Anderson.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you for being here. So Amy Anderson is a highly acclaimed independent Colorado choreographer and dancer and the founder of Engage Movement Arts, and Fran Page is the director of Aspen Dance Connection, and these two have come together to create an incredible long weekend of performances and workshops and masterclasses and artist talks, all kinds of things here in Carbondale, and that is all happening July 8th through the 11th. So I wanted to talk a little bit to you, Amy, to start, just to learn a little bit about your dance history. You have an incredible resume. You have been a ballerina specifically for a long time, and then my understanding is you moved a little bit into modern as well. What was your first experience with dance? When did you start dancing?
Well, I started at Colorado Ballet when I was 9 years old. And I trained and went up through the school. And I always wanted to be a dancer from the minute I saw dance when I was 3. And I was in gymnastics with my brothers because my mom didn't want to take us all to different locations. And then I finally got into ballet. And I danced with Colorado Ballet till I was 23. And after that, I started dancing with David Taylor Dance Theater, which was a ballet modern combination. And he does a company named Zicker that sometimes comes to Carbondale and performs.
Yeah.
So that was my basic background. I danced, you know, some in Europe and with Pacific Northwest Ballet as well.
Wonderful. And These last couple of years have been a little bit rough. We had a pandemic, and people are still kind of figuring out how to come out of that. What was it like for you in Denver as an artist working through the pandemic? And did anything change for you inspirationally during that time?
One of the things that's interesting for me is I also have a Pilates business, and I do a lot of dance medicine, working with dancers who are injured. And I was able to start up my practice because people just wanted to wear masks, and I started working on Zoom. And a lot of dancers who were working in their living rooms and, you know, trying to take class were getting injured. And so I actually ended up doing quite well because I had this whole other side of my Pilates practice that I was able to develop. Meanwhile, I'm getting to know dancers and working with them from some of the companies. Wonderbound is one here in Denver. And that's how I was able to snag a few of their dancers in their off time so they can come with us up to Carbondale to do shoes, as well as dancers from Colorado Ballet I had worked with previously, because I also worked there with the dancers there. So in a sense, the pandemic was terrible for a lot of people, but I thank the Pilates and dance gods for taking care of me, and I did okay.
Yeah.
And now, as I have an outdoor show, I was able to produce it with Fran.
Wonderful. Yeah, so let's dive into shoes a little bit. Amy, did you was shoes completed in 2019, or did you just recently complete it?
Shoes is always an ongoing, evolving thing, because I use some of the dancers to actually do the music, and some of them sing and choreograph as well as myself. And so each time I have a new cast, we adjust the show. So the show in and of itself in this iteration is complete, but the next time I do it, it could change again. And it continues to evolve every time we do it. And that's the fun of it, because the subject of shoes is so open-ended. And when somebody gets a good idea and we can integrate it in the show, I'll use it. And so there's some things we've done before that I'm not using, and then we have new things. And it keeps refreshing and evolving and changing. And it's been just a delight.
Oh, wow. Okay, nice. That's great. Maybe, Amy, you can tell us a little bit about shoes as a production and the inspiration for it and the evolution. And then, Fran, why don't you chime in and let us know kind of your perspective on that, what it is about to you.
So I guess I'll start. the funny thing about shoes is I got this idea way back when I was at David Taylor Dance Theater, and I had an injury and I was out and I couldn't dance, but I wanted to choreograph. My husband really encouraged me to choreograph. And I started working with my brother, and I thought we should do some pieces about shoes. And I don't know where that came from, but I just thought it would be fun because everybody wears shoes and everyone can relate to it. And I like to do comedy. So we did a piece at Colorado Ballet and they liked it. And then David Taylor had me do a few pieces. And I had this idea I wanted to do a whole evening of stuff about shoes, all the music, there would be artwork and dancing and singing and you name it, but it would all be about shoes. And so 3 years ago in 2018, I was at a place called the Living Arts Center, and the director of a Living Arts Center had done this outdoor concert going around the block in this industrial area in parking lots and loading docks. And I went, oh my God, that would be the perfect thing to do for shoes. And I sat down with her and I said, do you mind if I steal your idea? And she said, oh, no. I stole this from somebody 40 years ago when I was in London. So she said, no problem. So I did shoes the first time. I put it together with these dancers who were interested. I just went to some of my friends at Colorado Ballet and asked if they wanted to do some of it. And some of them make music, so they did some of the music. And we had a great time. And so I wanted to do it again the next year, because you do it once and then it evolves and you think, oh my gosh, I missed this opportunity. I should have done that. And so I did it again. And each year it's grown and more people come and see it. And it's become more fun and just more integrated and a whole story with going from beginning to end. So it's really been fun to work it.
Well, I've known Amy for a long time and her husband, Gregory Gonzalez. They both performed on my showcases when we used to do that. It was probably in 2007, I think, when they each had choreography there. And Lauren Wilder was doing our lighting for all those shows, and Lauren met Amy and then invited her, both of them, to perform on Lauren's shows, which the final one was Newtopia. And then during that time, Amy and I talked about doing something outdoors so we could funnel the money that you pay for a theater to pay the dancers. So before the COVID came, we were already talking about doing this outdoor performance. Oh, and so we were right on track.
Yeah, that's great.
And the timing was exactly what we wanted to do as well. So
okay, so you weren't planning to do this in 2022 and then you got delayed. This
no,
is,
we were actually planning on it this year. So
wonderful. Amazing.
Yeah.
And then I also wanted to ask about the dancers and the cast that you've chosen for this particular performance. And if you could just speak quickly, Amy, to their kind of ability and what you feel like they bring to this show.
Oh, my God. They are so wonderful. I am so lucky to have this group. I have former principal dancers with Colorado Ballet and one with Oregon Ballet Theater. That's Chauncey and Sharon. And then my husband, Greg. And I have a principal dancer with Ballet Ariel and three dancers from Wonderbound. All are the top-notch professional companies in Denver. And they're just a joy to work with. They bring so much to the choreography, things I wouldn't even think of. I'll give out an idea, and they'll do something even better than what I thought of. They've all danced full careers, and they're full-time professionals. And I have the good fortune of being able to snag them this summer. Because they're all off season. Mm. So if you want to see really great dancing, you're going to see it. They are amazing.
And I would like to add that I think the dancers are lucky to be with you and that they're really excited about doing something beyond just the classical work that where they had the opportunity to get paid. They get to really get their artistic teeth into it.
Mm. Yes.
And don't forget the tap dancer.
Oh, yes, that's the other one. John Williams, Mr. Tap, is a very well-known tap dancer here in Denver, and he's going to be leading the audience from one space to another and doing quite a bit of dancing, and we've inserted him into the show a couple of places, and he's a joy and so much fun.
Wow.
So he will also be doing tapping at both library shows. He's including magic tricks and some audience participation. So he'll be leading that as well. So you'll all get to know him and you'll just love him. He's fantastic.
So we have a really stacked schedule for while you all are here. Let's see. So the things that start first are demos. It's an adaptation?
It's a lecture demonstration. We're talking about when we go into the libraries. Mm-hmm. And the first library performance will be the 8th, which is a Thursday in Carbondale at 10 in the morning. And then the second library performance will be in Rifle the next day, Friday at 10 in the morning.
And so those are lecture demonstrations, July 8th and July 9th, 10 a.m. And those are both free, and it's a great place to bring your whole family. It's great for kids, for seniors.
I wanted to add that for those shows, we'll be having some live music. So we're bringing the musicians and some of the dances from Shoes, so everybody will get a little taste of the pieces that they'll be seeing, as well as like a fun lecture demonstration that's really good for kids.
And then also happening Thursday evening, there are a couple of classes. One of them is an adult class happening at the Launch Pad that is typically hosted by Dance Initiative, and Chauncey Parsons from Shoes will be teaching that class that evening from 6:15 to 7:45, and that will be kind of a ballet/modern technique master class, if I'm correct. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yes, and he'll also be teaching repertoire. He does a solo that could be done by a man or a woman, and he was going to teach his solo so everybody gets to learn something from the production.
Ooh, I love that.
And that solo's from Shoes?
Yeah.
Goody.
Yeah. So simultaneously, Sharon Wayner will teach 7 to 11-ish year olds, and that is a class that is typically hosted by Crystal River Ballet at the Lunch Pad Thursday from 5:30 to 6:30. And if you are interested in sending your kiddo to that, you can reach out to Fran at Aspen Dance at comcast.net. And then we get into the performances.
They're Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, 9, 10, and 11th of July at 7 p.m. And that will be over at the Saw Studios. And you can park at the Park and Ride over at Rafta or at Alpine Bank. But we're going to be using both sides of the street. And the audience will be walking along with them, just like she likes to have them do.
So you get to use your own shoes to move from one place to another to see the different pieces.
And that's why we also would like you to encourage you to bring something to sit on, either a chair or a blanket. And we're encouraging lots of kids to come because it's so funny and it's so entertaining. And I think everybody will love this. That's... I know they will. The musicians are going to be playing with Chris Bank at the Basalt Sunday Market. And John Williams, the tap dancer, is going to be tapping there with them as well.
And so that will be
Sunday afternoon.
Sunday afternoon at the Basalt Market. Okay. Right. And then there are two other things, sneaker making workshop as well as the Meet the Shoemakers talk. So tell me about the sneaker making workshop.
These people actually really teach you how to make shoes. It'll be Saturday or Sunday from 5 to 9. It's just one of those days. And they only want to have six people. And then at lunchtime, we're inviting all the young dancers to bring your lunch, you know, a sack lunch, and come and talk to her and listen to her because she performed for Cirque du Soleil in New Zealand.
And the sneaker making workshop is taught by who?
Annabelle Reeder and her husband.
Okay. And Annabelle is also the one who performed for Cirque du Soleil.
That's right.
That you can chat with about.
Right.
Yeah, the life of a trapeze artist and professional.
And she was a dancer and just a joy.
And that is also at the launch pad. We are also potentially looking at some weather as we have been having the last couple of weeks. And the master classes and some of the classes are inside, so those will just stay the same. But if we run into weather, you can check the AspenDanceConnection.org website to see what's happening tonight. I signed up for Friday night. Are we inside? Are we outside? And you can get your updates there. And if it does move to being inside, it will be at the launch pad at 76 South 4th Street in Carbondale. And otherwise, those performances are at Saw Studios, which I just think will be such a wonderful backdrop. Yeah. And anything else, Amy, that you want to add about the performance or just this adventure that you're taking to Carbondale?
Well, it's really fun for me to work with my brother and put this whole thing together. So he's the music director. He has put together some amazing musicians. There's a couple coming from Grand Junction, Scott Betts and his wife Alice, and I met them through tango. And Scott played in the tango orchestra. He plays the trumpet. And so he's going to play the trumpet in a couple of songs, and Alice is going to sing one. And they are fabulous. So we're also lucky to have some almost locals in the show as well.
And then she also has a violinist that will be playing.
Oh, yeah.
And
David Waldman, yes. He's a fantastic violinist here in Denver who played with the Colorado Symphony Orchestra.
Wow.
Yeah, just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's...
It just gets richer and richer.
It does. It's kind of like you just need to grab some tickets and go see what's happening. If you want to get all of the information, go to the AspenDanceConnection.org. You can see the full schedule there. Well, thank you both so much for chatting with me and letting us all know about what's happening here. I think it's such a wonderful production that's taking place here in Carbondale, and it just makes our community that much richer. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. We're looking forward to it.
Thank you, Megan, for that great interview with the folks putting on this cool event next weekend. And coming up next is another interview that Megan did with Katrina Toews, who discusses her experience working for the Washington Ballet. And she'll introduce her upcoming in-person class called Parent-Child Movement and American Sign Language for 18 months to 3 years old, coming up at the launch pad later this month.
Express Yourself listeners, this is Megan Jansen with Dance Initiative, and I have here in the studio with me Katrina Toews, who is getting ready to teach a special new class at the Launch Pad starting this month in July. And Katrina is a local choreographer and dancer and educator, and I'm going to let her introduce herself as well as this class that's coming up.
Thanks so much, Megan. Thanks for having me here. Yes, I'd love to introduce the new class. It's a parent and child, specifically for toddlers, movement and ASL, American Sign Language class that will be starting this July.
And Katrina, can you just very briefly introduce yourself and let us know when you came to the Valley here in Colorado and what you have been up to in the dance and movement world since you got here?
Yeah, well, we've been in the Roaring Fork Valley about 3 years now, and we moved from Washington, D.C., and I've been a faculty member at the Aspen Santa Fe Ballet School. I've enjoyed teaching with you and for Dance Initiative, and I also got to dance with Co-Motion, the dance company, the local company here in town, when I first arrived, and I've just also started my own classes through my own website, katrinataves.com, just teaching adults and this new class for kids in person and online at the launch pad, and also doing some arts consulting, dance, and otherwise.
Nice. And your adult classes right now are Pilates and ballet. And anything else that I'm missing?
Nope, that's it. Okay. Tuesday nights, Pilates, it's a mat class at 6 o'clock. And 7 o'clock, it's a more intermediate level class at 7. And then I still do an online class over Zoom Saturdays at 9.
Okay, perfect. And can you talk a little bit about your dance history, how you got into it? And I know you've had a long and robust career. So yeah, how that all unfolded for you?
Well, it started at age 5 when I asked my mom if I could take, you know, an extracurricular. And she said, yes, you can take one. It's either ballet or gymnastics. And I'm glad that I chose ballet. I quit in junior high because I wanted to just do all the other sports and music and choir and theatrical things that the other kids in my grade were doing. It was, you know, it was up to the point of like 5 days a week, and I really had to make a choice. Upon getting into college, I attended a small private liberal arts college in Kansas called Bethel College in North Newton, and I just took the basic ballet class, and I thought, oh, I'll see if I like it, and I just loved it. It just brought that passion back, and by the end of college, had done a double major in elementary education and fine arts, and took a lot of my courses because my small college didn't offer all the upper levels at Wichita State University. And I was on the 5-year plan, so I was doing my student teaching and my performance, culminating performance event where I focused on female leads in the field of dance and music and theater. And so I put together a show, and at that point I said, boy, I'd really like to further this, but I think I need to expand my horizons. And so I got into grad school at American University in DC, and so I headed to Washington, threw all my belongings in the back of my little red Mazda pickup and enjoyed my time there. And it was an opportunity that led me to teach at a local university in Virginia, get my Pilates certification, and then I was teaching at the Washington School of Ballet, and upon returning back to the city after a little time in Virginia, took the director of education role on at the ballet.
Wow. And how long did you do that?
That turned into 14 years. I have to like rewind my memory because it feels like a long time.
And so tell me what brought you to the Roaring Fork Valley.
So it was time to make a change, leave the city. We both have family in Colorado, and I also have family still in Kansas. So the Roaring Fork Valley seemed like a great place to still have my own career in dance, and my husband's an architect, so we could both find work. Perfect. And downsize a little bit.
Yeah, nice. So tell us a little about this upcoming class and your inspiration for it. Like, how did you come up with the idea for this class? It sounds really fun and really engaging.
Yes, I've been inspired by working with children and having two girls of my own, a 21-month-old and a 5.5-year-old. My 21-month-old had a pretty traumatic birth story. I still get a little emotional about that, so excuse the emotion. But a really beautiful story. And she has some unique abilities and disabilities that come along. We've gotten the opportunity because of her hearing. She has a hearing difference, so she has the loss of hearing in both of her ears. We got her hearing aids at week 7. And what was pretty powerful was we were able to start getting intervention services when she was just not even quite 2 months old. And so one of the options we had was to start learning ASL. And I, you know, told the provider, nah, I'm not really interested. I'm a really loud, I can be a real loud mouth and extroverted kind of person. And I want to talk. I want to engage with her. And I'm from a musical family and a theatrical family. And, you know, we're just very animated. So I really projected kind of my own needs. Soon enough, I learned that there are many situations where sound can get in the way of communication. And so you might be in a room where there's a lot of, you know, just different people talking. There might be music. There might be road noise. We don't know if her hearing will be stable. And so just to provide her options for communication if her hearing were to change. And also just it's so helpful, even for hearing children, just to have the capability to express and communicate their own needs is really expressed well through ASL. So we've been on the journey to learn that. And as a kinesthetic mover kind of person, I thought, what better way to kind of explore this? Three times a week, she receives PT and OT in her audiology services. And that really folds well into my line of work with learning how developmentally we can assist her with her movement and her fine motor skills. And so it just has seemed right to engage in a class that would be focused on kiddos between the months of 18 months to 3 years, and engage them with movement and learning some ASL through stories and some music. And I'd really like to highlight and encourage able-bodied and disabled-bodied kids. I think that I've learned through my education background, but just also having a daughter, ways that we can modify and create space and safety for kids with different abilities.
Yeah, absolutely. So is the style of the class going to be kind of storytelling through movement that you'll be doing, and then you'll also just be incorporating the ASL with the story? So it won't exactly be like teaching ASL from scratch. It'll just be incorporated so that there's kind of like maybe a subconscious learning. Is that correct?
That's a great way to put it together. I think the combination of kinesthetic learning or just movement and music and learning some basic ASL concepts will kind of flow in and out together. I have about four or five stories that I thought we will engage in over the 4 weeks. A great example is Brown Bear. Brown Bear, Brown Bear, what do you see? I'll teach the kids those signs, and we'll talk about colors and movement of animals, and we'll do some creative dance with that and just allow the parent and the child to engage with that wherever they're at. So no one needs a prerequisite to have already studied it. I'm very much in the beginning stages, so I'm no expert, but I figured I hadn't seen anything in the valley for my kiddos. So I thought if I'm looking for opportunities, I'm sure there are other parents out there looking for the same.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It seems like something that it would be so wonderful if all parents had access to ASL or even just movement as a way of communication. I know there are so many kiddos that just interpret life in their own ways, whether they're considered able-bodied or disabled. You know, I have a good friend whose son basically stopped talking during COVID. And so they're just using movement and they're using ASL, and nothing is quote unquote wrong with him. I just think he's taking his time. And they've had to go through that journey just like you, of learning something, and how nice would it be if that was just already part of the community in the way that you're trying to do it, just to invite everybody in, whether or not it's something that you need. I think it's so valuable for everyone to have that skill.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I mean, I think the other part of this is just social, getting back, being able to connect again with other people. I think COVID has affected all of us in many different ways, and especially for little ones. You know, I know for my own daughter, she was released from the NICU, but she was in quarantine from her birth. And when she was supposed to come out of quarantine, everyone in the world was going in. So it's definitely a journey to find those social emotional skills and just reconnecting. And so, yeah, just a place and space for people to do that, which will be Tuesdays at 10, from like 10 to 10:45, 10:50.
Okay.
For 4 weeks.
And you're saying 18 months to 3 years. And do you have people that are already signed up for the class? And do you have a capacity for the class?
Yeah. You can sign up at my website, which is katrinatave.com, and there is a registration link on the page. And you can also sign up for the 4 weeks or just a drop-in class. And yes, we'll limit the class to about 10 people.
Okay. And can you spell your name
yes.
for your website?
Yes, that's a funny one. My name is spelled KatrinaTOEWS. So it looks like katrinatoes.com, which goes well with the dance theme, but it's not really pronounced that way.
Okay.
So yeah, thanks for asking.
Yeah. And do you have any other dance projects in the works right now, performances or pieces that you're working on?
Yes, I am super excited to be teaching for Dance Initiative's Art and Dance camp that same week. It will start on July the 12th. And we'd love to have some more students. That's for students ages 9 through 13. Boys or girls are welcome to sign up. And I know it's on Dance Initiative's website. It's also on my website, too. So we would love to have a few more kiddos sign up.
And what is the gist of like what you'll be teaching and working on that week?
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of teach a mix of contemporary and ballet and fuse it together and find this place where we can find some foundation of ballet and foundation of modern and string that together. And that will, the class will, the day on the dance side will always start with a technique portion, and then we'll move into choreography. I have just a fun and light and not deep piece that I think all kids deserve to dance. We're trying to not to get too esoteric in there and just have a little fun. And set to a James Brown piece of music. So yeah, just it will allow the kids to also create some of the movement, and I'll use some of the base of my own choreography. But yeah, well, it'll be a collaboration, and then we'll look forward to presenting that work on Saturday night at the new theater in Willits.
That's right. Yeah, Saturday, July 17th. So if you can't join Katrina's ASL class or have a kid that is joining the dance camp, we will be performing on the 17th at the new contemporary venue outside in Willits. And we will also be showing a performance by the resident artists who will have been here the week prior. So that'll be a really full show with kids and professional group from New York and some live music and some live poetry, and it'll be really fun. So hopefully you can come and see Katrina's choreography and her work and learn more about her and her classes. And thanks so much just for what you're doing in our community. I think it's really wonderful and really important.
Thanks so much for having me and highlighting this form of dance in the community. I really appreciate it too. I did my best to notice when the call came down the line. Up to the platform of surrender, I was brought, but I was kind. And sometimes I get nervous when I see an open door. Close your eyes, clear your heart. Cut the cord. Are we human? Or are we dancers?
Well, that about sums it up for today's Express Yourself.
Always action-packed here in Carbondale.
Always action-packed.
I am looking forward to the shoe workshop, which I'll be participating in and making my first pair of shoes.
And for all of you out there on First Friday,
woo-woo!
There's no shortage of exciting things. There's a few concerts going on, one at Harmony Scott till 8 p.m., there's something over at True Nature that starts at 5:30 and will be broadcast live on Katie and Kenny, apparently.
Good old Katie and Kenny.
And also over on 4th Street in Maine, there is Steve's Guitars presents the 21st annual Mount Sopris Music Fest.
Woo!
With local bands performing from 5 to 9 tonight. So get on out there and
have some fun
and express yourself.
You know it. You gotta let me go.